are friends with fantasy benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Hey, Mike, I say we collude against Justin in every league we're in together so he can't win.
I know why this question was asked.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
It's a ballsy move to back out of a trade. It's also a ballsy move to back out of a trade with a dude who's your boss.
20 Pipe saves! Down. We could have had 20 saves more.
Nobody cares about JMR Gomez.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
And as long as we're throwing out random proclamations and things we write on, how's Bryce Harper look right now, Eli? I mean, I really like Wong. That is totally getting put up in front.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 116 of the Friends Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Eli Rosenzweig and Mike Warner. How you guys doing?
I'm doing well. I don't know about Eli. His White Sox / James Shields are getting absolutely clobbered, so I'm sure he's not doing great.
It's a marathon, not a sprint.
I also just want to say, I know everybody and their mom has heard about the Orlando news, and I'm from about 40 minutes away from Orlando, and I've been in the city probably 40, 50 times in my life, and know the place that actually, got shot up and everything. And I know, like, people that are listening to this are probably wanting to take a break from all the news and stuff that's going on, but what I hate hearing is all of these, like, political stances by all these people just because this situation actually happened. I think the most important thing is just for everybody to kind of just come together and not, worry so much about, trying to have, their political views, listened to by other people, and just, try and be, just more understanding of the situation and try and spread more, just positive vibes and love as opposed to being so, negative about it and trying to put forth your political views,
Yeah.
Well said, Mike.
Yeah, very well said. Obviously, our thoughts and prayers go out to all the victims. Before we jump into talking about some baseball here, just remind everybody that we are brought to you by OfficialFantasyRings.com. You can go to OfficialFantasyRings.com, get a customized ring for your league, and then go out and win it and show it off and make your friends kiss their ring. I'm going to make Eli and Mike kiss my rings because I plan on winning at least two or three of them this season. In the various leagues that I'm competing in. So definitely go out, get that, punch your friends in the face, leave a mark. They're pretty cool. We just saw pictures of the one that our fantasy football champion for our listener league last year won. It just got sent to him, and it's looking pretty awesome. So hopefully he will tweet out some pictures when that actually arrives and he gets to try it on.
Hey, Mike, I say we collude against Justin in every league we're in together so he can't win.
The problem, though, is he's in a few listener leagues that we're actually not a part of. Mm-hmm. So if for some reason we end up having to kiss these quote-unquote rings, I will definitely not kiss the one that I wasn't a part of.
Well, and unfortunately, the only other one you guys could collude in that you're both in is the one where you guys are partners in the Barf League. So it's not really going to do a whole lot to collude against me.
And we're also ahead of you in that league, so we're not
worried about
you.
For now. So let's go ahead and jump into some topics. Just some questions that I've been asked recently on Twitter, or I've seen people kind of talking about on Twitter. And this one has some, like, personal meaning to me. And the question is, if you agree to a trade through text, email, or verbally, but not on the site that's being used, like ESPN, Yahoo, or CBS, is it okay for one of the parties to back out? Mike, what are your thoughts on this?
I know why this question was asked, but anyways, me personally, whether it be fantasy football or baseball, 9 times out of 10, I am negotiating a trade via text, via Facebook, or whatever type of communication I use. I'm usually talking out a trade with somebody. I'm not just sending an offer over to them or vice versa. It's something that's, talked about, and we go through everything, and we usually come to some sort of agreement. And when that agreement is made, again, it should be something that is kind of written in stone. It's kind of like a handshake, except for you're not there in person. And, you know, at least to me, you know, if you handshake something, then that's something that needs to be done. It's something you agree to. It's something that you need to, you know, continue or at least fulfill on your end. And if I haven't had that happen to me, whenever I've agreed to a trade with somebody, it has always gone through. But if it did, then I can tell you, first and foremost, I would not negotiate any more trades further with that person. And I would be, you know, liable to definitely cuss them out. I think that that's really a chump move. It's something that, you know, I think it's just, especially if it's somebody that's trying to get more out of the deal and try and just, you know, just screw you out of, you know, the agreement that was, you know, pretty much came to, you know, from the beginning. So I'd be pissed off if that happened. Again, it's something that you usually, if you talk through and you agree, it needs to be done, set over with, and then just kind of move on.
Eli, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, Mike nailed that. Like, I was going to say everything he just said. It's just a bad move. Even if you feel like you're making regret making the agreement, you still got to go through with it. Because if you back out, it's just going to make that guy never want to trade with you. It's going to make perhaps everyone in the league not want to trade with you. So in the long run, it's not going to work out. It might hurt you in the short term by actually making the deal, but you got to go, you know, be a man of your word, go through with the trade. You know, fantasy should be fun. Like, just doing stuff like this kind of just ruins leagues and ruins relationships in the league, and it's just not worth it. So if you make a deal, via text or email, whatever, you just got to follow through.
Yep. You know, and I'll give the background on why this is personal for me. I agreed to a trade with somebody, what had happened was he was looking to make a deal. I told him, hey, listen, I don't have time to negotiate right now. I've got something going on. If you want to send me offers, go ahead and I'll let you know whether I'm interested in them or not. And the first offer he sent me, I said, I looked at it. I liked it for myself. I said, sounds good. Let's do it. And then he sends a message back. He goes, oh, well, you accepted that so quickly. I think we should renegotiate. I pretty much told him I was done with him at that point. And he's been trying to get back in my good graces ever since. And I told him, listen, if you're going to be a man of your word and you want me to trust you in future trade negotiations, then you need to man up and accept, you know, and actually push through the trade we agreed to. He has yet to do it. So I'm shaming him a little bit publicly. I won't use his name. Even though, you know, I mean, listen, you know, it's a ballsy move to back out of a trade. It's also a ballsy move to back out of a trade with a dude who's your boss. So, you know, I mean, so, you know, I guess kudos to him for being a little bit ballsy. But yeah, if you agree to something, you know, even if there's like an injury or something like that, you know, be a man of your word, follow through on it. You know, it's, at the end of the day, it's a game and you don't want to ruin a relationship or ruin a relationship in the game. Like, you know, I've had, you know, we're all a part of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits League. And there's been, you know, trade rapes in that league where some people don't want to trade with other people because of it, you know? And so you never want to burn bridges in a league because you never know how long that, you know, that vendetta or bridge is going to be burnt for.
Yeah, I just want to add. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, well, me and Mike had a different situation, but it's kind of along the same lines. Mm-hmm. So someone in the Barf League, someone offered us a deal involving Billy Hamilton, and they made that offer before Hamilton went on the 7-day concussion DL. And me and Mike were looking at it like a couple days later. We're like, "Ooh, this is a pretty good deal." And he was trying to convince me to do it. I'm like, "It's just so douchey because that offer was made a couple days before anything happened. Like, yeah, that guy probably should have pulled the offer, but I still think it's kind of a douche move to accept the deal after the fact.
Well, and we didn't accept it. You know, ultimately, yes. I felt it was best for us not to accept it. But I do think that if somebody sends you, you know, just somebody that's, you know, if you're in a public league or whatever, if you don't know the person, and even if you do know the person, if they send you a trade offer and, you know, they haven't said any words to you at all, you know, outside of that, and, you know, that night somebody gets injured, I think the nice thing to do is send them a message saying, hey, you know, this just happened. You know, are you still okay to do the deal? Or, you know, again, if you're not, if that person isn't keeping up with it and doesn't revoke the trade themselves, I think it's kind of fair game at that point. You know, and then also in terms of Billy Hamilton, it's not like he's out for the season or anything like that. You know, obviously the person wants Hamilton for his speed, but overall, I think that, you know, in the big scheme of things, you know, if somebody sends you an offer and, you know, something happens that night in baseball or in football, whatever it might be, you know, it's their responsibility to revoke the offer or to, you know, at least say to you like, hey, do you want to modify this a bit? You know, I'm still in to do this, but, you know, since this person's injured, let's, you know, modify it a bit. That way I'm not getting completely screwed out of it. I think it's kind of a, you know, I think it's kind of a, you know, circumstance to circumstance basis, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, in terms of, like, let's say, you know, let's say in the Billy Hamilton situation, for instance, you know, the guy offered the trade when Billy Hamilton was, with healthy and you guys didn't accept it. Like, if you guys had accepted it, I'd say tough shit. That happens, yeah, you know? Yeah. But like, since you guys hadn't accepted it, you know, and, you know, these, you know, people in the Barf League are people you hope, you know, in the industry that are your friends or will become your friends or guests on the podcast. I hope you don't purposely burn them.
No.
I made a trade with Yancey Eaton of the Dear Mr. Fantasy podcast in a different industry league. You know, he was looking for kind of some depth and some bats, and I was looking for an elite arm, you know, because I'm in like fourth place in that league and I have like no pitching whatsoever. So, you know, I picked up Max Scherzer and Salty Macchia for, you know, three of my guys that, you know, to me were lesser quality, but, you know, gave him some depth. And in the original trade negotiation, he asked for Yan Gomes. Well, Yan Gomes at the time was hurt. And so I felt, you know, Yancey's my friend in the industry. You know, I've been on the Dear Mr. Fantasy podcast. You know, we hope to get Yancey at some point on one of our podcasts over here. You know, and I was like, you know, hey, dude, just, you know, heads up, you know, Yan Gomes is injured. You know, would you rather have, you know, Derek Norris? And he was like, oh, shoot. Yeah, I totally would rather have that. You know, you don't want to burn a bridge. And I think the bottom line is, you know, don't get me wrong. We're trying to win. We play the game to win. But at some point, too, there's integrity involved. And it depends on what kind of person you want to be. If you want to be the type of person that screws people over, go ahead. But I promise you, it'll bite you in the end.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too, is a lot of us play in leagues with close friends. And not only are we, you know, trading with these people, but it's people we see outside of the league itself. You know, we go out and, you know, have some drinks with them or, you know, play, you know, softball outside of, you know, just our fantasy league or whatever. And, you know, if you burn a bridge once, you know, it's going to be there's going to come a time where you need to make a trade again. And this person might be the perfect partner for you to do that. And you will not be able to do it because you kind of screwed them over. We've talked about trades a lot on this podcast, but, you know, we've gone as far as to say losing a deal initially to try and build, you know, a relationship with that person or getting that person's good graces for the long term could be a big benefit to you as well. But especially screwing them out of the deal, especially after you agreed to it, that's a big problem. It's something that's going to burn bridges.
Yeah.
I like how Mike is acting all high and mighty when it was me who had to convince him not to do the Billy Hamilton.
Listen, hard not to. I mean, I'll be honest. It's, you know, you see a trade offer like that, you know, especially one that's been up for a few days, and all of a sudden, like, the main piece you're giving up is now hurt, you know? Or for instance, like, you know, I had a guy who, in the same league I'm in with Yancey, who offered me this, you know, huge deal. The centerpiece I was giving up was D. Gordon. And like literally the next day he gets suspended, or the news comes out, he gets suspended. And I'm up in the middle of the night when the news broke. I mean, it was really, really tempting to not send him D. Gordon right then, you know, who was, you know, being suspended for 80 games, you know, but, you know, at the end of the day, like, you know, you've got to think, you know, how, you know, do you really want to be known as the guy who, you know, who screwed someone?
I do.
Can I just point out that it looks like James Steele is going to end up with a no decision because the White Sox are coming back in this game?
Oh, my God. Yeah, James Shields sucks. You guys are wasting $9 million a year for how many more years?
Two more after this, I believe.
Oh, I guess not too bad. You guys were going to suck anyway, so. All right, let's move on to the next question, and that is, in a Dynasty or Keeper League format, who are you targeting as a buy low opportunity? And I didn't put any kind of, any sort of caveats on this in terms of, buy low if you're rebuilding, buy low if you are, attempting to compete. I just want to know, who you got, you can kind of take it as the way you want it. Who are guys that you're looking at as buy low opportunities kind of in deeper league formats or longer league formats?
I wrote down seven names, so maybe, okay.
Ahead and start it up.
Well, one of the main categories I looked at was kind of injured guys. So if you're rebuilding and you don't need the production now, who are some guys that contending teams might have that they need to move to try to get production? So a guy like Moustakas. Moustakas is a really solid guy. He's out for the year, so maybe you can get him for cheap. Michael Brantley is a guy who he may not play much at all this year, and if he does, he probably won't be that productive. He's still pretty young, so Brantley is a guy you might want to target. D. Gordon, obviously he's not hurt, but the long suspensions, people might be frustrated with him. In terms of guys that are actually healthy and just playing like crap, I think Justin Upton is a decent option. Also, Jose Abreu, Carlos Correa. I know the price on Correa is probably still high, but he has been disappointing. I'm sure there's a lot of frustrated Correa owners right now, especially in redraft leagues, but we're talking about keeper and dynasty. Also, Miguel Sano. Not only is he hurt, but he's been bad all year, so he's a guy that maybe you can get for cheaper than you should go for.
Yeah, I really like the Sano. Along the injury theme, one of the guys that really struck me is AJ Pollock.
Oh, yes.
A guy who showed, first round upside last year. And probably, he may play at the end of the season, or, if somehow the Diamondbacks can, wiggle away into a playoff spot, maybe play in the playoffs, but more than likely he's not playing this year. So he's a guy that I would target. You got any names for us, Mike?
Yeah, just kind of piggyback off of what you guys are saying. I think Greg Bird is somebody that I've been talking about all year as a guy that if he was playing this year, it would have been amazing because he would have gotten full-time at-bats, and it would have been awesome in that park. I really am upset that he's out the whole season, but I think in keeper and dynasty leagues, this is a guy that you can get for somewhat of a cheap cost and, reap some rewards next year. I was also saying that about Jurickson Profar last season, and, obviously he's not a buy-low candidate now because I think everybody is kind of joining the hype train on him. But, I also think Jose Berrios presents a pretty nice buying opportunity because he had a rough go of it to start off this season. And, maybe people are still, worried about him a bit. Michael Taylor from Washington, I still really like in keeper and dynasty formats. I think, he's a guy that can go 20-20 in terms of home run stolen bases. And yeah, the batting average might be a problem, but Jason Wirth is only going to, last so long. And, overall, I think he's going to find an opportunity in Washington sometime here in the near future. I think that Giancarlo Stanton is somebody that as the days go on, people will sour on more and more. I never bought into him being a first round player this year. And again, I like to mention this every time I talk about Stanton. He's my favorite player in all of baseball. There's nobody I love more, but he's not a first round player, and he never has been. But I do think that as, again, time goes on and people sour on him more and more, I know there's some big pundits out there that are really against Stanton right now. And the more that people start listening to that, I think there presents more and more of a buying opportunity for him. And, I still like Jake Lamb. Odubel Herrera, I think, is a guy that's having a great season this year, but still can be bought for cheap. Even Brandon Drury from Arizona, I think, is a guy that you can get for cheap too. So I there's a ton of names, but I'm just kind of trying to go through a few.
Yeah, a couple more injury names. Kyle Schwarber.
Oh, yeah,
Hunter, absolutely. Hunter Pence. I know Pence isn't the youngest of guys, but, he's out for probably another 7 weeks or something, 6 or 7 weeks, so... he's a guy that I would be looking at. I listened to last week's episode. You guys all talked about how you thought Ken Giles would get the job back. I think this is the perfect time to buy low on Ken Giles.
Absolutely.
Even though I don't necessarily think he's going to get the job back this year.
Oh, he will.
Yasiel Puig is a guy who's injured and has never reached the potential that people saw for him. But you got to think at some point he puts it together. At least I do. I think he's talented enough that that is the case. Guys that I'm not going to buy low on, and maybe I'll throw this back around to you guys. If there's guys that you might fit the same kind of bill that we're talking about, but we're not willing to buy low on. A guy I loved coming into this year was Garrett Richards. I am not buying low on Garrett Richards. You know, unless I'm getting him like dirt cheap and I can reserve him and all that kind of stuff. You know, the chance that he's going to even pitch before 2018 again is pretty kind of slim to none. Is there any guys that you guys would not want to buy low on?
Me personally, I still don't really care for Lorenzo Cain. I feel like, you know, if you were to acquire him right now, you would have to pay a heavy, heavy price for him, and I'm still just not buying. Jackie Bradley Jr., I think, is another guy that I would not be willing to buy right now. His price would be way too high in a keeper league. Same thing with Jonathan Villar, to be honest. As much as I love him and I have him in multiple spots, I would not be able to buy him from somebody because, you know, he's leading the league in stolen bases. Cespedes, as much as he wants to, you know, crush me for saying this, I just don't believe in
him. I feel like Mike doesn't understand the question.
No, he doesn't. But that's okay. I'm just gonna let him keep talking.
No, I don't want to buy him in keeper leagues. That's what I'm saying.
No, I said buy low on guys that fit the bill we were just talking about, but you don't want to buy low on.
Oh yeah, no, I have to take a second for that. My bad,
Eli. You got any?
Yeah, I didn't prepare any. Off the top, yeah.
You know,
I can't
typically
think of
for me, it's pitching. You know, I'll buy low on injured hitters, but I'm probably not going to buy low on injured pitching, especially in dynasty in keeper formats. You know, like for instance, I'm pretty new at rebuilding. You know, dynasty teams, but I'm rebuilding. Well,
because your teams are always so good.
Well, usually I do what I did in the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Dynasty League, and it's like a quick kind of reload. It's not like a true rebuild. But I'm doing it in two leagues right now. One is an AL only keeper league that Mike and I are in, which my team I sacrificed a lot to try to make first place last year, fell just short in second. And my, you know, I gave up like all my draft picks in order to do it for this year. And then one is in an actual dynasty league where my team was just, you know, awful. And so I've sold off. But what the way I'm going about it is I'm really targeting young hitters, you know, and prospect hitters, not as many prospect pitchers, because one, pitching prospects don't, you know, pan out, at least in my mind, as often as they do for hitters. And there's just so much bigger chance of catastrophic injury.
What do we think about Colton Wong? I feel like this is probably a pretty good opportunity to be buying low.
Yeah, if you're not competing, I don't mind that call.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because I mean, does anybody really believe in Diaz being able to continue this, you know, into next year?
No, I don't think he'll be able to continue quite this. I think he's more of a, you know, platoon guy, you know, somebody that comes in, you know, play 3-4 times a week, somebody like that. You know, that's ultimately what I think his role is. So
I was
really
super high on Wong. I mean, I really liked Wong. That is totally getting put up in front. But
how about
all about the Wong?
I say no on too low.
I agree.
Well, it's because of his age. You know, I mean, if he was 5 years younger, I'd be all about it. But, I mean, you know, he's injured. I mean, if you can get him for cheap, why not? Like, you know, I'd rather have him if I'm trying. I'd rather buy in on him if I was trying to compete this year and I could get him for next to nothing.
What about Homer Bailey and Alex Cobb?
No one Bailey.
I'm
Cobb.
I'm more on the Cobb side, but I'm a Rays guy as well. But there's just something off with Bailey. You know, I just...
It's been a while for him, man. It's just been too long.
He's shown some elite skills, though, in the past. Though,
he has.
But when do you expect them to be back to form? I mean, not everybody is Matt Harvey or Yu Darvish.
I think you'll be able to get productive innings out of both of them probably next year, and then probably full seasons of, you know, hopefully close to what they've done in the past in 2018, I'm sorry. So, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much, and that's kind of a project, you know, especially if you are rebuilding, that's more of what you're targeting. Those guys are going to be getting, not up there in age, but they're going to be.
Alex Cobb is already 28. He'll be 29 before the start of next season. And Homer Bailey, let's see, he's already 30.
Yeah, so you're looking at, like, low 30s, you know, I mean, which you still will be able to get production out of them. But, you know, me personally, I would go for Cobb. But I just wanted to know because really in Keeper Dynasty, I haven't heard a lot of talk about either of them personally.
Yeah, I think I would go after Cobb before I would go after Bailey. But I think it's kind of in the Garrett Richards kind of argument is I don't really want guys, you know, in dynasty leagues coming off of Tommy John.
Sure. And I'm still not buying Archie Bradley either, even though I know his price is probably still not that big. I'm just really not buying him.
Yeah, bad place to pitch too. What are we? I got a couple third basemen I want to talk about real quick. Michael Franco and Matt Duffy.
Well, I've been a big Matt Duffy detractor.
Oh, so. I was going to ask you on that. Yeah, I just feel like he's a good hitter. Like, obviously, it's like a deep league situation, but
I think if he was in a different park, I'd be much more interested in him. Like, you know, I just Saris from FanGraphs. Wrote a great article earlier in the season about his swing and projecting some more power from it. We have yet to really see it, though the times he has hit home runs, they've been very few and far between this season. The swing is, you know, it's got some power in it. I just don't know how well it's going to play in San Francisco. You know, I think his best asset is one that is they don't really use for him, which is his speed. And so, like, I mean, really, for the most part, he's kind of like an empty batting average guy. So he's not necessarily a guy that I'm extremely interested in, you know, unless I know he's going to end up somewhere else. And the Giants have him under control for quite a while. Franco's a guy I love, but sometimes you got to wonder if he's ever going to deliver on the promise that, you know, I and a lot of other people thought he would deliver on this year.
It takes him time. He's kind of like Gregory Polanco. Polanco, every time he went up a level in the minor leagues, it always took him time to adjust. Same thing with Michael Franco. And yes, we're starting to get to the time here where he's been in the majors for a good bit. You know, I mean, I think total now he's up to close to 600 plate appearances or somewhere in that region. And, you know, I think the second half of the season is going to be really telling. If he has a really nice second half, I think we can expect that for the years to come. Now, if he kind of stays where he's at, which isn't that bad. I mean, he's still
he's already got 11 home runs.
Yeah, the same as Danny Espinosa, might I add. And I mean, at the end of the year, if he has, you know, 20, 25 bombs, you know, yeah, 70 or so RBIs, that's really not that bad. I mean, we all, especially me, I thought he'd be close to a top 10 third baseman, but we've had a lot of third basemen this year, you know, especially with the multi-position eligibility type stuff where, you know, we've had some guys kind of crop up out of nowhere, especially like Evan Longoria, you know, but overall, I think Franco hasn't really done anything that has made me feel, you know, like his value is going to be getting worse in the upcoming years. He makes extremely good contact, and he's going to be hitting a good ballpark. The
but
Phillies,
it's not
I
extremely
think,
extremely hard contact, and he doesn't put the ball in the air enough, in my opinion.
No, and that's stuff he'll absolutely have to work on. But he has great pull power, and I think that will play in Philly.
I mean, a guy like him playing in Philadelphia with the amount of power he should have in his bat, and he pulls the ball, you know, about 46% of the time. Like he should be a 30 home run guy.
And yeah. I think you will be.
I agree with you. You know, but we haven't quite seen it yet. I mean, his hard contact percentage is 26.5%. That, to me, needs to go up. And, you know, maybe it's a matter of just a tiny swing adjustment in order to lift the ball a little bit more. But I don't know. It's not quite there yet. And, you know, like you said, I think he barely has 600 plate appearances in the major leagues right now. I'd have to do some math in my head.
It's like 620 something or something like that.
It's just under. Oh no, you know, it's just under 600. It's
It's got 586 at bats, but also 43 walks.
Sorry, I was looking at bats. Yeah. So just a little over 600 plate appearances. I think things are going to come together. I think everybody was just a little bit overzealous, myself included. You know, seeing kind of the way he ended last year. And then, you know, the Mike Moustakas effect. There's always a guy that tricks us in spring training.
Yeah. Well, I don't think he's tricking us, but I do think that Franco is a guy that you want in regular 5x5 as opposed to OBP because, you know, his walk rate will never be something that, you know, he flourishes in. I mean, he's more of a guy that makes contact. He swings early in the count. So ultimately, he's definitely more suited for 5x5 leagues. So in OBP, I would kind of drop him down a bit because that is something I'm sure of. He's never going to be a big walk guy. But overall, man, I do think he's going to be a top 10 third baseman for the next, you know, 5 to 8 years or so. And I think that's, you know, immensely valuable.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back right after this.
How many times have you spent $15 on a fantasy baseball magazine only to read the same nonsense? Oh, we're going to help you dominate your league. We're not like all the other cookie-cutter magazines. You know what? They're lying to you. You know why? Because they don't offer you anything that differentiates you from the pack. I'm Joe Pizzapia, author of the Fantasy Baseball Black Book 2016 edition and the creator of Relative Position Value, better known as RPV. Relative Position Value is the only way to really separate you from the herd. The Fantasy Baseball Black Book series has been number one on Amazon 4 straight years, and this has been number 5. For $4.99 on Amazon and iBooks, you can really dominate your league in every style and every format with RPV. Get your copy today and find out what the buzz is about.
All right, let's go ahead and jump into talking about some of the players we have on our list for today. You know, Mike wanted to talk about Trevor Bauer because he watched him pitch very closely in his last start. Trevor Bauer is a guy that I've been extremely high on for quite a while, and it seems like he's starting to put things together. Mike, what did you see in his last start?
Yeah, I haven't been able to really sit down and watch Bauer much this season. So when he went out and faced the Angels last start, I really wanted to kind of just sit down, you know, have a beer, kind of check him out a bit. And he really impressed me. I mean, is there times where, you know, you kind of see his mechanics get out of whack and he misses his spots? Absolutely. But for the most part, he really kind of kept himself composed and was just really mature in the way he was going about his business. And if you look through his game logs, you know, especially the last three, 7 innings pitched, 7 2/3, 8 innings, you know, and he's not giving up many runs. He's only given up more than 3 runs only in one start so far this year. You know, the strikeout rate is continuing to be solid, right around 8 strikeouts per 9. The walks are the best of his career. He still is maintaining a really good swing strike rate. Overall, in his pitch mix, he's throwing the sinker more, which is producing some more ground balls for him. He's also throwing the changeup more, which is also producing more ground balls. Overall, I really like what I'm seeing from Bauer. This is the first time where I feel like he is turning the corner a bit. And no, I don't think he's ever going to be a fantasy ace like some people might have thought coming out of, you know, the MLB draft a few years ago. But I do think that this is insanely encouraging for him, and I'm really buying him. I think that he's going to be a, you know, top, what, 40-ish starter the rest of the way, maybe top 50, somewhere in there. Overall, I think he's going to be a number 3, number 4 starter for your team. And most of the time, or for the most part, people bought him for a very low cost so far in drafts this year.
All right, Eli, do you have a counterpoint?
No, I mean, I kind of wish he went to me first, because I was going to echo a lot of the things that Mike said. The walk rate's dipped 3%, ground ball rate's up 7.5%, the velocity's up a little bit. He ditched his crappy slider, and he's throwing more cutters, curves, and changeups, like Mike said. I just think he's becoming closer to what we thought he would be coming up when he was in the minor leagues. He's not going to be quite as great as we thought, but he's certainly going to be serviceable. And, you know, like Mike said, you got him at a pretty good price, so I think he's going to be pretty solid the rest of the way.
Yeah, for me, I'd like to see him get rid of some more of his pitches. Personally, I think he's better when he focuses in on, you know, 4 or 5 pitches as opposed to the 16 or whatever he fucking throws. You know, and getting rid of the slot, kind of not throwing the slider as much. He's only thrown it what 0.4% of the time this year. Has definitely helped. The cutter isn't, you know, extremely effective either. So that's a pitch that if I was him, I would be thinking about kind of cutting out a little bit as well. So, but I like his stuff. You know, he's got good velocity. He pitches in a decent park, and I've always really liked the way he looks at the game. I mean, he's one of the more analytical pitchers out there. Very, you know, in a Zach Greinke vein, where he's willing to use kind of modern technology and modern research in order to try to enhance his game. And I like his attitude. Like, you know, from a non-fantasy angle, I know our buddies over at ITL who are huge Diamondbacks fan can't stand him, but I've always kind of really liked his, you know, kind of his cocky attitude, is, you know, I'm going to do things my way and figure it out. I think as he gets older, maybe he becomes a little bit more coachable, and then maybe take a little bit more advice from his pitching coach, because I think sometimes that he may struggle a little bit with that, thinking he knows what he's doing already. I think there's some promise for him. I think Mike is right in terms of the fact that I don't think he ever becomes a fantasy ace, but I think he's got fantasy 3 upside, fantasy two upside, if he can put it all together. So he's a guy that I've had on a number of my teams this year, and I've picked up off the waiver wire when people have dropped him, and I'm hoping to enjoy some of the profit. Let's go ahead and move on to our next guy, and that is the aforementioned Giancarlo Stanton, who is just not returning the value where people got, what people paid for him. Mike, you've already said you were down on him, so I'll throw this one to Eli first. Eli, what are you seeing with Stanton, and is he ever going to regain his form?
Well, I think he'll regain his form, but my main problem was that his form before was overrated to begin with. Mike kind of touched on this. Like, I just feel like we've always overrated him. He's only scored 80 runs once. He's only driven in 90 once. That one year he stole 13 bases, complete fluke. He's a 264 lifetime hitter. Like, I just feel like we get way too enamored with power hitters. I always rail every week about how guys who hit homers get overrated. You know, there's four other categories that matter. He's obviously going to turn this around. He's too talented. He's hit too many homers in his career to be this crappy. But I've always thought he was overhyped. So I don't own him anywhere. But he's going to turn this around. So if you can buy low on him, I think you got to go try to do it, because he's a guy that if he gets hot, he can help you win your league.
Mike, are you buying low on Stanton?
I mean, if I can, he's a surefire bet to hit for power. I mean, he still is, you know, top 20 in ISO, even though he is, you know, striking out more than anybody except for Steven Souza right now. And he's also swinging and missing more than anybody right now as well. So it's not just that he's
got the lowest ISO of his career.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and obviously that's going to be the case because he's not making contact. Overall, I don't see this continuing as bad as it's been. Although, you know, if you look through the months here, he's progressively gotten worse. But I just, you know, I mean, he's hitting righties at a 180 clip and lefties at a 220 clip. I mentioned, you know, last year on the podcast and, you know, earlier this year that I never thought he was going to be a batting average asset, especially what he kind of showed these last couple of years, 288 and 265. But I think that, you know, somewhere in the 230, 240 range is definitely more in line with what his plate skills are. And I think he'll continually kind of creep back up there. The second half surely will be much better than this. But I am a little worried about the line drive rate dip, you know, 6% less than it was the last 2 years. And it's by far the worst of his career. Not by far, but it is the worst of his career. Overall, I think that he is going to hit for power. It's just going to take some time and you're going to have to ride it out. He just should be on your bench until he kind of turns it around. And if you're looking for power,
he should be on your bench.
Yes, until he turns it around.
I mean, what depth of the league are you talking about? He should be on your bench.
Well, in shallower formats, if you obviously in NL only, you have to play him no matter what. But
like a
15
team mixed, you're not benching him.
I would. I have him in a 15-team mixer right now, and I benched him. You know, I mean, I put in Jake Lamb. I put in, you know, somebody else that's going to give me something for now. I mean, if you look through his game logs, he's not doing anything. I mean, it's got.
I agree with Mike. I mean, he's got in the, like, 115 at-bats in May and June. He's got four homers. He's hitting, like, 130. I mean, it's been a disaster. He's been, like Mike said, he's been getting worse and worse. He's got to show some signs.
He has 12 hits since the start of May.
He's also got a career-low BABIP, a 243 BABIP to go along with that 192 average. I mean, this is going to turn around.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just a matter of... Yeah, I mean, I guess if you want to bench him, you can't. I'm more of a guy who likes to just, you know, set it and forget it and look at the numbers at the end of the year and I'm happy with it, because I don't want to miss out on the three-homer game that is coming at some point.
And I agree with that. You know, I mean, if you're playing him, then I completely understand why. Just me personally, in the leagues that I can do it, I'm benching him for right now because obviously there's something wrong.
In a 10 or 12 team mix, I have no problem doing that. I'd have a real hard time benching Stanton in a 15-team mix. I would have to have a really dynamite offense to really get away with benching Stanton. And just the potential. I mean, you got to think, you know, I'm a little bit higher on Stanton than you are. I mean, I wasn't, like, that much higher coming into the season. But, I mean, at least rest of the way, like, I think, like, his true batting average is probably closer to 250 than it is, like, a 230, 240.
At the end of the season?
Oh, no, I'm talking about rest of the way.
Yeah, I mean, rest of the way, I think he probably hits about 250 is what I'm saying, which will average out when the season's over to about 230-ish or so.
I think he's hitting 250, 260 rest of the way. But, you know, I mean, how many home runs do you think he ends up with this year? I mean, keeping in mind, like, he was on a torrid pace last year. He was, you know, even only hitting 265 last season, he hit 27 home runs in half a season.
Yeah, I still think he easily ends up with 30. It wouldn't surprise me if he ended up with what he did in 2014, which was 37. You know, I think that's probably at least 30, probably 35, somewhere in that region. That's
That's about where I'm at, too. You know, and the Marlins lineup, once they get D. Gordon back, will be a little bit better. You know, it's not like Marlins lineup has been bad either, you know.
No, not at all. The Marlins lineup has done fairly well this year. And if they had D. Gordon all season, which, you know, RIP, but if they had him, I think that this team would be doing a little bit, I mean, not like to the point where they'd be in the playoff hunt, but I think the offense would be doing really well, actually. I think they'd be one of the best offenses in the league in terms of like top 15, top 10, somewhere in there. You know, I mean, they have guys that can get on base. They have guys that can slug them in. You know, I think that D. Gordon is a big loss that if they had him would have been a big difference maker.
All right. Any last thoughts on Stanton, Eli?
No, let's move on to Jameson Taillon, baby.
All right, let's talk about some Jameson Taillon. You know, I was a big proponent of Glasnow coming into the year. I really thought he would get to the majors a little bit quicker than it seems like he's going to. I had no thoughts that a Taillon would make it to the majors this season. I mean, guy hasn't, I mean, I don't even know, has he pitched an inning in the last two seasons at all?
Nope.
So, like, the thought that he would make it to the majors this year was a little insane to me. But here he is, and he looks pretty good to start off. What are you seeing from Taillon, Eli?
Well, I mean, it's only been one start.
It was a really impressive start.
No, it was good. It appears that he's going to be pitching on Tuesday. We're recording this on Monday, and you'll be listening to it on Wednesday. So hopefully he does well in that start. It looks like Nicasio has been shuffled out of the rotation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, he's got great control, six walks and 61 innings in the minors and like 61 strikeouts. He's a big dude, throws hard. He's got a good repertoire. I just love that. I feel like he's going to be a guy that can go deep into games because he's so big and strong and he limits the walk. So he's on a good team. I just feel like he's going to get a lot of wins, a good amount of strikeouts. He's not going to kill your whip. I think he can give you a big boost the rest of the way. You know, so many people in fantasy right now are struggling to find pitching. So I feel like everyone can use this guy right now. I'm on board the rest of the way big time.
All right, Mike, are you on board?
Absolutely. I mean, his control is just pinpoint. I will say, you know, I watched that start that he had last week against the Mets, and he was a little bit jittery. A guy with that type of command was, you know, he just wasn't hitting his spots, which, you know, rightfully so. I mean, it's a rookie making his first start in the major leagues. But I think, you know, there is a ton to like with him. I don't think he's going to be somebody that, you know, drastically changes your pitching rotation, though, for this year at least. I think he will be a nice option for you, somebody that you can use on a consistent basis until he gets, you know, shut down or moved to the bullpen to kind of rest his arm a bit. But overall, I think that he's somebody that will probably put up somewhere in the, you know, 3.75 ERA range, probably somewhere in the, you know, 7 to 8 strikeout per nine, good control, probably in the, you know, 2.5, you know, walks per nine range. Overall, solid pitcher, pitches in a good park, and we don't know what's going on with Gerrit Cole. So we could see kind of him stay in the rotation for a long period of time as opposed to just kind of getting spot starts here and there or, you know, only, you know, lasting a month or two. I think he might be in for the long haul, depending on how far he goes in terms of innings.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'll start with the good. Watching the start, I mean, the velocity on the fastball was impressive to begin with, because I didn't think a guy who'd spent as much time on the DL in the minor leagues as him would be able to, you know, come back with that kind of velocity, you know, 95 on the fastball. But to me, what was even more impressive was the secondary pitches, the curve and the changeup. They looked really good. Yes, he missed his spots. That's going to happen, like you said, with a young pitcher and a guy coming off of so many injuries. But that was impressive. To me, this is a sell high guy. Like if I was lucky enough to grab him off of the waiver wire, or if I had him, you know, if I'm in a keeper dynasty format, and you know, I am trying to sell high on him as soon as possible, because there is no way he is pitching another 70 innings. Like, there's just no way. I mean, dude hasn't pitched one inning in baseball since 2013, when he pitched 147 innings. He's already got 67 and two thirds innings between the majors and the minors. There's no way he's getting another 60 innings in this year. So, like, my guess is what happens is he pitches up until the Super 2 deadline in the rotation. Glasnow comes up, replaces him. He goes to the bullpen.
So you think that he won't go for more than 130 innings this year or so?
No way. I would be absolutely shocked if he did.
And you want him though in keeper leagues, correct? Not redraft. Or both.
Honestly, I don't want him in either. Long term.
Why don't you want him long term?
Because a guy with his injury history is more than likely bound to get injured again.
Okay.
And like I said when we were talking about buying low on guys at the top of the show, I'm less likely to want to buy in on young pitching, especially because the chance of catastrophic injury, and he's had multiple catastrophic injuries, already in his career. He is a big, strong guy, but that doesn't prevent you from breaking down as a pitcher. So if I could get good value right now, yeah, I'm selling him.
Yeah, I don't mind that call. And I've been skeptical on Taillon, not because of the skills, but because of the innings he'll give you this year. We talked about it last week on the podcast with Ryan Bloomfield, and we kind of came to the conclusion as a group that we thought, 60 to 70 more innings this year is probably in the cards for him. If they move him to the bullpen at some point, you're looking at anywhere from, 8 to 12 starts, depending on how long they go, maybe less, So I completely agree with it there. Long term, though, I think he shows a ton of skills. I understand the injury risk, so that's what, that's definitely something I'd be monitoring as well. But I've been a Glasnow backer since the beginning of the year, and I think that if you're trying to get a spark to your team, somebody that's going to be a big difference maker, I think Glasnow could be that guy just because of the strikeout rate alone. And if they're able to just hone in on the walk rate a bit with him once he gets to the majors and Steerage kind of rubs some of that crazy magic on him, hopefully, that's the type of guy that can be a real difference maker if things kind of pan out right, and the innings probably will be a little bit more than somebody like Taillon.
Yeah, I mean, if I could trade Taillon, let's say I'm competing in a dynasty keeper format and I've got Taillon on my team, I'm trying to trade him right now for
Did you do Berrios?
Not if I'm competing. Because I don't know if and when Berrios comes back up.
Okay. What about Snell, who's coming up now?
Yes. In a heartbeat.
What about Bauer? Absolutely Bauer.
I think I would aim a little higher.
What about Matt Shoemaker?
No.
What about James Paxton?
Oh, that's an interesting guy. Because had you asked me a week ago, I would have said no way. But the way he kind of looks now is really, really intriguing. I think I'd still aim a little higher.
Michael Fulmer.
If I'm competing this year, yes.
Tanner Roark.
No.
Jose Quintana.
Yes.
No, I'm just kidding.
Yes.
How about Rick Porcello?
No.
James Shield?
But I wouldn't even go after the younger guys. Like right now, if I've got Taillon, I would go to the if the Lester owner's rebuilding, if the Verlander owner's rebuilding.
Yeah. No.
Those are guys that I would go after, if I'm moving down my list right here.
Well, I'm just kinda asking in terms of where you kind of value him overall right now. You could get into the Adam Conleys of the world and, people
that. I just think especially if, like Eli said, we're recording this on Monday evening. He's going to pitch on Tuesday. If he has another dynamite start, you have to sell him. In my mind, wouldn't you rather, if we're talking dynasty, who would you rather have long term? Taillon, you already did Blake Snell. Off the top of my head, Severino.
Taillon,
not close.
Yeah, not really? Close. Oh, yeah,
you got a weird direction for Severino.
All right, a White Sox, Rondon. Or Rodon.
I'm going Taillon for now.
National League, man.
Oh no, I'm going. Yeah, that's, you guys are crazy on that one.
I love Rodon, but it's National League, man. Like, I feel like people still underrate
Aaron Nola. Is.
Ooh, that's a good one. I think I'm going Nola based on strikeout upside.
I don't think it's close. Like, to me, like, especially long term, like, you know, Nola's shown no issues, you know, health wise.
The thing is, really is that Taillon, other than that really, you know, catastrophic problem in 2014 and 15, he really pitched consistently from, you know, his whole other minor league, all of his other minor league seasons.
If I was, I mean, okay, look, what kind of odds would you give Taillon to reaching 200 innings in any of the next 3 years?
Oh, I think it could happen. I think I don't think a lot of people have two Tommy Johns. I mean, it definitely happens. There's no doubt about that. But I feel like he's got his Tommy John out of the way. I think he's going to be fine. I'm encouraged with him.
I think it just depends on, like, how willing or how much, you know, how risk averse you are. If you are confident or feel comfortable in Taillon and that he will be able to pitch innings, you know, I think next year, you know, if you're looking for next season, you know, production, he will safely be in the 160 to 170 innings range. You know, maybe more, maybe a little bit less, depending on how his outings actually go or how his year actually goes. And this is barring health, obviously, as well. But, you know, I also think that he can hit the 200 plateau sometime in the next 3 years. Nola and him, I think, are really close. And, you know, not just because, you know, or not because of the fact of the fact that, you know, Nola's in the majors and Taillon just kind of came up. But I think talent level wise, they're really close. And
okay. Let me go through and ask different kind of a would you rather.
Okay.
I'm looking at kind of my preseason rank of pitchers. Prospect pitchers. Okay. Obviously, we're taking Giolito and Urias, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Alex Reyes.
I like
Reyes.
Reyes long term, yeah.
I already said Snell. I would take Snell. You guys both taking Snell?
It's close. I mean, the thing that scares me about Snell is the walk rate.
National League, dude. It's so great to pitch in the National League. Oh. Ridiculous.
It's close. I would go Snell. Barely. Glasnow. I would go Glasnow. I've always been a Glasnow guy.
Yeah, me too. All right. Yeah. Anderson Espinosa.
I'm still going Taillon because it's far away.
I think I'm still taking Espinosa. Jose De Leon.
Oh, it's Taillon.
That's really close to me.
Great place to pitch, though, for De Leon.
Sounds to me like Eli's the highest on Taillon. Then I'm kind of a step down. And then
I'm going to be honest. I don't think even with how and I really like I said, I really liked how he looked, but the long term prognosis to me, and, like, you know, maybe I'm falling into the trap of
one, you are,
caring too much about long term and not taking kind of the bet on the skills as opposed to, you know, because any pitcher can get hurt. Let's be honest.
But
I don't know if he's in the top 10 for me out of prospect pitchers.
For me, it would matter more, like, his injury history if he wasn't pitching so quality in the minor. Like, he went six innings or more in every single start in the minor leagues this year except one. And, I mean, almost all of them were quality starts. Actually, every single one were quality starts except for one. I mean, he was doing great. You know, I mean, it'd be one thing if they were kind of monitoring his innings and giving him the Urias treatment where he was only throwing four or five inning, you know, spurts. But, I mean, he went six, seven innings in every start. You know, he also, you know, did well in the majors as well. I mean, he didn't have the most dynamic outing, but he went six innings again. You know, I mean, he gave up a home run. But, I mean, I think he's just safe, in my opinion, even though it sounds weird saying that about a guy that just, you know, was out for 2 years, essentially.
Yeah, and see, I think it's the exact opposite. I don't think he's safe at all. I think what he is I think he's got upside. And if I'm going to, and don't get me wrong, like, a lot of people with prospects, that's what they want. And a lot of times that's what I want, too. But I think, you know, especially Giolito, Urias, Reyes, Snell, Glasnow, Espinosa, you know, those six, to me, at least all have better upside than him.
And I can agree with that.
Yeah. You know, you want to start talking about him in the same neighborhood as the De Leons, the Cody Reeds, the Braden Shipleys, Hader, you know, those kind of guys, then maybe that's, you know, we could start having a discussion about who has higher upside, who has the lower floor and stuff like that. But, I mean, to me, he's no higher, at least in the prospect, you know, kind of atmosphere than seven out of starting pitchers. But, you know, for those of you who missed out on the, you know, everybody missed out on the prospect pod this week because, unfortunately, some things came up for Matt. You know, there's a little bit of prospect talk for you.
Not for long.
But let's go ahead and jump into a guy who used to be a top prospect and is one of Mike's favorite players of all time. That's Will Myers. Mike, what have you seen from Will Myers this year that you love so much?
I've seen that he's still a piece of shit human being that decided to just be an asshole and have a breakout season once again this year. I mean, we talked about him, a month ago or so, maybe a month and a half. I mean, he's continuing what he's doing. I mean, he just hit another home run tonight. I mean, he's sitting at 14 home runs on the season. You know, I mean, I think I agree with what Eli said before, which was the stolen bases aren't going to continue quite the way they have been. I mean, he has 8 right now, which is already a career high. I think for the season, it'd be safe to say he finishes with like 11, 12. You know, I mean, I can't see him doubling what he has now. If he were to double it and go for 16 stolen bases and, you know, 25, 30 home runs, then we're talking about a player that probably will go in the top 3 or 4 rounds next year, which I obviously will not pay. But overall, I don't think there's much to say. The power's real. I don't think he could get traded. There's a possibility that happens to him.
I think he has like 3 more years of control, so I don't think he's going anywhere.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Overall, I think he's going to finish with 25 home runs or so. I think he's going to bat somewhere in the vicinity of 270 plus. Right now, he's at almost 290. You know, I think you'll see a lot about the same as what you have been seeing, not to quite the same degree. But, you know, overall, man, if you bought him very cheap this year, you have to be happy with him. And I don't think that this is a guy that you sell. I think this is a guy that you kind of just sit on and continue to kind of get the production out of.
Eli, how are you feeling about Will Myers?
I was obsessed with him as a prospect, but I've kind of soured on him a little bit. I do think I'd probably sell him. Like Mike said, I don't think the stolen bases are going to sustain. He never really ran in the minors. This seems kind of fluky to me. The walk rate's down. The home run, the fly ball is just really spiked. I know he has power, so yeah, it's probably going to be better than it has in the past. I don't think it's going to be this high. The one thing I do like is that his swinging strike rate has decreased every single year his career, so that's encouraging. But I mean, I like him. I just think with the homer to fly ball so high and the fact that he's stealing, I just feel like this is about as high as his value will ever be, and I think it's a great time to cash in.
I think if I'm in a redraft league, I'm probably going to take the hold approach. If I'm in a keeper dynasty format, I'm selling.
I agree.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
You know, I mean, one of the things we haven't talked about, and did we talk about? I think we talked about him on the Thursday pod, right?
Yeah, I feel like we recently talked about him.
Okay. And I don't know if I mentioned this on the Thursday pod, but, you know, one of the, you know, nice benefits of him this year is he's got the multi-positional eligibility.
Yep.
Well, he's going to be first base only after this year. Mm. And, like, how valuable is he at first base only?
That's a good point.
I don't think
right now he's the number 2 first baseman in all of fantasy. So I said about a month and a half ago that he would be a top 10 ish guy. I think we went through some names and decided he was more of a top 15. But I mean,
wow, he is Trumbo number 1. Wow, that's crazy. But I mean,
fantasy's stupid,
right?
And right now, looking at the numbers and where players are ranked is kind of a, you know, dubious thing to do. I mean, overall. I think he ends up, like we said, you know, about a top 15 guy, which means that he is going to go down a bit in his production. But overall, I think he's still going to be highly productive. He's going to be a guy that continues, you know, to be, you know, in a lineup where he hits probably, you know, again, another 15 home runs or so and, you know, probably steals a couple more bases for you. Not a great lineup, but I also do like what you said, Justin, about selling him in keeper leagues, because this is a guy that has an injury track record. He also has had, you know, bouts of inconsistency with his production, with his swing, with his attitude. I mean, and overall, he's just a guy that I don't really want to have on my team because there is just so many things at play with him, especially mentally. He's just not a guy that's all the way there, you know.
And,
so,
and this is, you know, I mean, a team that's going to sell pretty much anything that isn't nailed down. Like, that, what is that offense going to look like in a month? You know, a lot of
like Manny Margot and
will be nice for, you know, guys who are rebuilding in prospect teams. But in terms of, you know, his counting stats, you know, because of the lineup around him, it may not be extremely pretty.
Exactly.
So, like, you know, he's already got 40 runs and 37 RBIs. like, what's the chance that that's going to continue rest of the way after they sell whatever pieces they have in that offense? You know, they're going to get rid of Alexi Ramirez. They're going to do their best to get rid of Matt Kemp, though I don't know how they're going to be able to do that. You know, it could get ugly here towards the end of the season. I agree with you guys in terms of I don't think the speed is 100% legitimate, but the Padres are top 10 in stolen bases this season, so they are pushing it kind of on the base paths, and sometimes it's a little bit more about opportunity than it is necessarily about pure speed. So I could see him stealing another 5 or 6 bases rest of the way, hitting another 10 home runs, and that's a pretty good season. But long term, yeah, if I'm in Dynasty Keeper, if I'm not playing for this year, I'm probably looking to sell him to somebody who remembers what name value he used to have.
Yeah, and I don't mind. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, I was just going to add that his speed score is the highest of his career. And, you know, you're right, Justin. The Padres are stealing him almost nonstop. You know, I mean, this is by far the most attempts he's, you know, been on pace for in his career as well. You know, I don't mind the stance as well, not just selling him in keeper leagues, but if you want to sell him in redraft, I don't mind it. I don't think it's necessarily the smartest thing to do. But I think if he stays healthy, this is going to be a guy that, you know, hits, again, 25 home runs, over 10 stolen bases, probably goes 70-70 in runs and RBIs, probably a fourth, fifth, third round player next year, which I, again, will not be willing to buy.
All right. Final word, Eli, on Will Myers.
Well, I was actually going to go a little bit, very much off topic. We were talking about steals a lot. I just wanted to brag that I said Manny Machado was not going to steal much this year, and he's got 0 attempts. So
I said the same thing also. Yeah.
Well, and I mean, if you guys remember when we talked about him, I said that it wouldn't surprise me if he took a dip in steals. I didn't think it would be nothing, but...
Well, the ad and shortstop eligibility kind of negates that, so...
Yeah, he's just too good to be running. It's kind of like how Trout doesn't run that much anymore. He's like, he's just too good, like...
And as long as we're throwing out random proclamations of things we're right on, how's Bryce Harper look right now, Eli?
I'm not worried. He's gonna get hot. When he gets hot, look out.
At least he got pitched to tonight. And also, I know we talked about it before, but Max Scherzer looked absolutely elite at the beginning of the game tonight. And
shocking.
I'm just saying, like, for 5 innings, he pitched the best I've ever seen him pitch for 5 innings. I understand he's had big games in the past, but he really got up against a Cubs. It felt like a playoff game, and it was awesome to see.
All right, let's move on to the Colorado bullpen real quick. We don't have a ton of time left because I've been up pretty much all day on like 2 hours of sleep. Let's talk about the Colorado closing situation. They named Carlos Estevez the closer, kind of while Jake McGee is injured on the DL. Are you guys rushing to your waiver wires to pick him up? Start with you, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, if you need saves, Eli and I did just pick him up in Barf because we needed saves desperately, even though we're, you know, again, second in the league. We don't need saves that bad.
Yeah, you know, but we wouldn't need saves if we had picked up
Gianmar Gomez, who's not going to end up with a job. Anyways.
He's got like 20 saves. Down, Eli. We could have had 20 saves more.
Whatever. Nobody cares about Gianmar Gomez. Can you let me get back on topic, please? You know, I still love Adam Ottavino, and he's, you know, somebody that will be making his way back. Jason Mott is obviously, you know, still kind of running around in there, and, you know, obviously Jake McGee will be making his way back at some point as well. But, you know, Estevez, I'm going to be completely honest, I don't know much about at all. But in his minor league, you know, track record, he's always had the ability to strike out a ton of batters. You know, there's times 11, you know, 10 strikeouts per 9 in there. You know, obviously, you know, people that, you know, have a big strikeout rate tend to walk a lot of guys as well, which is what he does. But he's also gotten really unlucky in terms of left on base or strand rate this season, which has kind of inflated his ERA a bit. Leverage index for him, which is, you know, the high leverage situations that the Rockies use their relievers in, he is tops among the Colorado bullpen, and that includes Jake McGee. So they have trusted him more than anybody else in there. And if he has a string of really good outings, there is a chance that I think he could be in that job for a longer time than people might think. So overall, for the short term, I think that he's a guy to pick up. He's going to give you saves. He's going to give you strikeouts. And, you know, obviously a Rockies pitcher, you're not looking for great peripherals from, but I think that he'll be okay for you in the short term.
Eli, what are your thoughts on Estevez?
This is a tough one because it kind of looks like a minimum stay on the DL for Jake McGee. I don't know that to be certain, but although, you know, it's not like McGee's been all that good anyway. So, I mean, if you need saves, you got to go out and get this guy because anytime there's a closer for cheap on the waiver wire, no matter how long he's got the job, you got to go out and get it. It's not like he's been dominant. He's got 10 walks in 20 innings. He's allowed 3 homers. He's had 0 strikeouts in 5 of his last 10 outings. His minor league track record's okay. It's go out and get him, but don't expect this sustain for too long, because he may lose his job in 2 weeks. But even if he does lose his job in 2 weeks, you know, maybe you get like 3 or 4 saves for a small fab bid. So go out and get him if you can.
Yeah, I think the only way you go out and get this guy is if you're desperate for saves like you guys are in the Barclays. I mean, the guy, like, he's striking out guys, you know, almost, you know, kind of 9.75 strikeouts per 9, but he's walking a ton of guys, and, I mean, he seems, like, I don't know a ton about him either, but just looking at his numbers so far this year, he's only got a 36.5% ground ball percentage, and he's got, like, an almost 50% fly ball percentage in Colorado.
Yeah, guys who walk a lot of people and allow a lot of fly balls, that doesn't really... They play well, of course.
Yeah, and so, like, that to me just, like, it screams, like, a ton of blow-up opportunities here. It just, like, if I'm okay in saves, there's no way I'm touching this guy, because I think he'll destroy ratios. I think while, to me at least this season, I don't think we've seen as many kind of, closer turnovers as we have in years past. I still think there are guys you could probably go out and get via trade that aren't going to destroy your ratios the way this guy has the potential to do. So, I mean, unless I'm completely desperate for saves, I don't think there's any way I'm touching this guy. Let's go ahead and move on to the last guy we're going to talk about today, and that's Randall Grichuk of the Cardinals. Got to talk about him because Matt's not here, and it gives Eli the opportunity to rant a little bit. Eli, what have you thought about Randall Grichuk so far?
I never liked him. He's a 250 hitter in the majors in his career. He didn't hit 260 in either AAA or AA. He never draws walks. Like, for him to be any good whatsoever, he has to be crazy hot with the power, because he's not going to be an asset in any of the other categories if he's not. So in order for him to score runs or drive in runs, he's got to go apeshit with homers, because he's not going to steal bases. He's not going to hit for a good average. Like, he's just not that good, man. Like, I know he had like 17 homers last year in only 100 games, but other than that, he really didn't do much anyway. Like, he's just empty power. And his power's not even showing.
Not Matt, or Mike, any thoughts on Grichuk?
How dare you just call me Matt? What do you think this is?
I mean, I was just a little flabbergasted by the intensity of Eli's rant right there.
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously upset about something else other than just Randall Grichuk. Well,
hold on a second. I complain about everyone like this.
Not with that much passion, though. There's something deep in Randall Grichuk that you just...
Well, because Matt's obsessed with him, and I also think Cardinals are always overrated. And, like, I just don't understand why anyone ever thought this guy was, like, a special hitter, because he's not.
I mean, listen, I think that he is a guy that will get better as the season goes on. I mean, he hasn't been a complete... You know, he hasn't been nothing for you. I mean, he has 8 home runs on the year. That's not terrible. Everything else has been bad, and I don't own him anywhere. I felt like he was going too high in drafts, and, you know, I think reasonably thinking he was going to, you know, do what he did last season was kind of a fool's thing to do. But, you know, overall, you know, he's hitting lefties at a 172 clip. Last year, he hit him at a 265 clip. Also, 281 against righties last year, 228 this season. You know, he's obviously, you know, his strikeout rate actually is a little better than it was last year. He's, you know, taken. Yeah, I mean, it's only 26% as opposed to last year where it was, what, 34%. You know, this year, he's walking a bit more. His hard contact is better than it was last year. He's suffering from an insanely bad BABIP. You know, 240 BABIP is really, really bad. He wasn't going to be somebody that was an asset in batting average in general, but overall, I think that he will steal a couple more bases. You know, I think it's not out of the realm of possibility that he'll end up with 10. You know, he's at 3 right now, 7 for the rest of the year. I don't think that that's a completely crazy...
You actually have to get on base to steal.
Agreed. And I think that will change. You know,
he's
I think
more than he did last year too.
That's why.
Not a great walk rate.
Still doesn't draw walks though.
I mentioned that he has a better walk rate, which really tells me that his plate skills are better. He's just getting a bit unlucky. No, he's not a star like, you know, he was drafted to be. But overall, when the season's said and done, you know, I mean, I think he ends up with close to, you know, 20 home runs, you know, about 10 stolen bases. And, you know, hopefully the batting average creeps back up to the, you know, 240 range, which means that he would probably hit 260, 270 the rest of the way. So I'd buy him if people were just completely out like Eli.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely more in Mike's camp. I don't think he's a star either. I thought I said in the preseason that he was overdrafted. I was high on him coming into last year, but this year, I mean, I felt like, yeah, he was going, you know, at least a few rounds ahead of where he should be going. But I mean, he is who he is. He's a guy that offers some decent pop, is in a good lineup, so the counting stats should be okay. And you know, he is striking out less. He is walking a little bit more. His BABIP is atrociously low, you know, much lower than his career average. So the average will probably come up, you know, a decent amount. He's a guy that'll probably hit, what, 245 rest of the way, maybe hit another 15 home runs and steal three or four more bags. You know, at the end of the day, that's not bad numbers. You know, it's not going to be great for your rate stats, but I think he's going to be fine, and if I could get him at a severe discount, I probably would.
Agreed.
Under. All right. Well,
that is going to wrap us up for today. We have Bogman of the In This League podcast coming on tomorrow's podcast, so definitely check that out since we, unfortunately, our guest for today had to cancel last minute. But we will get him on later in the season. Eli, why don't you tell people what you're working on, where you can be reached?
You can find me on the Twitter at EliFWFB continue to check out me and Cam on the Tuesday show and completely ignore Mike and Cam on the Friday show.
Mike, where can you be reached on Twitter and what are you working on?
I just want to say this is really fun, just the three of us. You know, I mean, just like the old days in football last year, we had our preseason show of football where I first actually talked to Eli, and you know, I've been disappointed ever since. But overall, you can reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner FWFB. You can read my raise updates on fantasypros.com. Check out my daily matchups column on baseballhq.com. I'm coming up with a hidden treasures is what I'm calling it piece for friends with fantasybenefits.com. It's gonna be coming out Wednesday. It's just kind of guys on the waiver wire that are 50% less or 50% owned or less in Yahoo and ESPN that you can kind of take a gamble on for the rest of the year. Please go on the site. We have all types of stuff that we can do in terms of interacting with you guys. Go on our Facebook group, rate and review us on iTunes. Just please help us out, and yeah, hope you enjoy everything.
And you can always reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. You can email me or the show at friendsoffantasybenefits at gmail.com. You can read whatever I write on friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Right now I'm focusing kind of on football ranks, kind of early football ranks, because we will be getting ready for the football podcast to make its triumphant return and the basketball podcast to make its triumphant return here in the next few weeks. Hopefully we'll have those up and running by at least the beginning of July. And then right now I'm writing most of my baseball stuff over at Rotographs. I should have an article on Wednesday coming out talking about streaming for stolen bases on based on catchers. So targeting catchers who are poor at throwing out runners. So definitely check that out over on Fangraphs fantasy side, which is Rotographs. For Eli, Mike, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season. Yeah, I don't know what the hell happened with my internet right there.
Oh, it's all good.
Like, all of a sudden, like, I couldn't hear Mike, and then like it just totally just shut down. I had to disconnect my computer from the internet and just reboot it.
No, it's no biggie. I mean, we lost our Jean-Marc Gomez rant, but it's all good.
Oh no, I'll fit that in. Don't worry.
Nobody cares about your stupid Jean-Marc Gomez rant. He's gonna lose his job. I can't wait till that fucker loses
his
job.
Or I'll throw it in.
So who cares if he loses his job? Oh, okay. I don't care if he loses his job. We would have got 20 fucking saves, you nimwit.
How do you know that we would have even actually rewarded him? I don't know.
Hell yeah, Tim Anderson. No, nice play.
Did he make a single?
He's not Jimmy Rollins.
Oh, just so you know, by the way, Eli, double by Matt Kemp. So, suck it.
I saw that. Did he score? No, what a shock.
Oh, okay.
He's going to score like eight more runs the rest of the way.
Matt Kemp one is good just walking in runs right now. He's walked in two consecutive batters.
Yeah, he was ready to come back. Not. The Giants, man, they need to do something about one of their players, like they or one of their pitching guys. They need to like at least acquire one starter the rest of the way or something. Like
James Shields might be available.
Oh, God.
He might be. You know, trade another right-handed bat like Mac Williamson or something.
Yeah, I don't know who they would target. It's not like they have much in their farm system to. You know, you would pretty much have to target a team that's rebuilding that's got a really awful contract and be like, hey, we'll take that on.
LeBron's pretty much taking over this game.
I know. And Kyrie can't miss. I was looking forward to criticizing Billy Burns. Oh, well.
Well, we'll cover him on Thursday or on tomorrow or Wednesday, whatever. I don't know. I don't know what day it is anymore. I gotta go eat.
Yeah, you go eat.
But it's always a pleasure talking to you guys. Eli, write something. Mike, continue to write something.
Yeah, I started last night after you yelled at me, so it'll be done.
I already yelled at Eli.
Yep. So, Daddy Justin needs to throw down the hammer.
Mm-hmm. Like, you know.
True that.
Like, let's be honest. Nobody's reading this shit anyways.
Now, will you calm the fuck down?
No.
Now, I do think we need to hire more writers.
I do, too. But, you know, personally right now, this is a transition period for us. We lost out on not having the preseason. So I'm not as worried, and that's why I haven't
been. But we have the preseason for football.
Yes,
so
we have that coming.
It comes up in 86 days, 21 hours, 16 minutes, and 12 seconds.
Football. Ugh.
Shut up, Eli. You're fucking all about football.
All right. I got to run, guys. Have a good night.
All right. Hey, see ya.
Really fun episode, too. Way better than last week.
What do you mean way better than last week?
When I wasn't on.
That's because he wasn't on.
Oh, whatever. Shut up. I don't know why we even had
a baseball HQ suck fest.
It was.